This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
Well, this is also your weekly news roundup on 101.9 High FM, where we break down the biggest stories shaping our country right now. Joining us in studio, we welcome Eliezer Enfield, a third-year politics, philosophy, and economics student at Eduvos Bedfordview. And Eliezer is currently completing his work, Integrated Learning, right here at High FM as a news intern. Eliezer, welcome back to the show. Well, it's been another busy week in South African politics, sport, and development. And today we'll be looking at the DA's proposed cabinet reshuffle, South Africa's prospects also at the Women's T20 Cricket World Cup, and the latest developments around Gauteng's long-awaited 10 billion rand mega city project. Let's get started. Eliezer, welcome once again to the show. Perhaps now the biggest political story of the week, the Democratic Alliance's proposed cabinet reshuffle under newly elected leader Jordan Hill Lewis. Okay, begin by giving us the headlines and what changes are being proposed.
Firstly, thank you for having me. It's great to be back. There's quite a few. We'll start with the big ones. Obviously, I think a lot of different people are going to talk about this cabinet reshuffle. So what I want to focus on quickly is the ministries themselves. The biggest story is that John Steenhuisen, who was the former DA party leader from 2019 to, I think it was beginning of April this year, he is being demoted from Ministry of Agriculture to just a deputy minister. I believe it's in the Minister of Trade. That's the biggest story. Vili Okom, who's currently the Minister of the Environment and Fisheries and so on, that's what the department is called, is going to be moved into his position. And then David Mania, who is currently the Western Cape MEC for Education, is being promoted to Cabinet to take Okom's position. That is the biggest story at the moment.
You know, interestingly, John Steenhuisen's move from agriculture to a deputy minister position. What is that telling us about the direction that Hill Lewis wants to take the DA party?
Well, this is the first time we've seen him show his hand as leader. He's been talking quite a lot about how he wants to remain as mayor and not be in the cabinet himself. And this is the first sign that that is actually his intention. But firstly, the other thing is that it seems that there's a certain standard that the DA now want, and whether this is reactionary, because there are quite a few voters who were angry with Steenhuisen's performance as minister, particularly to do with the foot and mouth disease vaccines saga, which not only was it bungled, but also the ministry insisted on only the state being able to give out the vaccines, even though DA themselves claimed to be the party of small government and the private sector.
You know, Eliezer, for that matter, how unusual do you believe it is for a former party leader to face what many are describing as a demotion within government?
Within South Africa, it's totally unprecedented, purely because we've just never had a situation like this. It's mostly just been the ANC themselves, and the leader of the ANC is usually pushed out as president afterwards. That's usually what happens. So this is the first time something's happened like this. Even in the 1994 GNU, when de Klerk resigned as leader of the National Party, he also took the party out of government. So this is totally unprecedented.
You know, another appointment generating discussion, let's just digress a bit, is that of Jack Bloom to water and sanitation. Now, why do you think this recommendation has attracted attention both politically and symbolically?
Well, of course, on the face of it, he's just becoming a deputy minister in theory. But the biggest story is that South Africa hasn't had a Jewish member of the executive since 2008. And that was Ronnie Casserolls of the ANC, who, as many people know, does not have such a good relationship with the Jewish community because of his long history of activism against Israel, which culminated in his glowing praise for the October 7th atrocities. So Jack Bloom himself is Jewish, and he is known for not only being the supporter of Israel, but also being an observant Jewish person. So it's the first time we've actually had someone like this in cabinet.
You know, from your perspective, sorry, did I cut you off here?
Oh, no, no, I made a mistake there. The deputy minister isn't technically the cabinet, it's the executive, but...
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so what then, what are you sensing here regarding this proposed reshuffle? What is it? Tell us about the DA strategy within the government of national unity going forward. What are you seeing?
It looks to me that there's a very... They're trying to... To show this image of being this sort of technocratic party that gets things done. Mm-hmm. But they also want, it seems to be, loud ones. Because if you look at some of the other people that have been removed, like Dr. Mimi Khondwe, she was a deputy, I believe, for electricity. And she hasn't actually done anything wrong, but they also, she hasn't been very high profile. So that's definitely one of them. The other thing is that DA have to show that they are better than the ANC, because otherwise they're just becoming the same. So that's the thing with John Steenhuisen.
Well, let's see how much better they're going to show themselves during this municipal election year, Eliezer. Let's move on to all things sport. Now, well, the World Cup is in the spotlight right now. Bafana Bafana are playing later against Czechia. We can maybe just discuss that. I want to get your predictions on that. But with so much focus on Bafana Bafana's campaign, many people may not perhaps realize that the Proteas women are also competing on the world stage. So tell us, how has that tournament unfolded so far?
So far, hasn't gone exactly to plan for the Proteas women. First game was quite a thumping loss to the Australians, who are, I think, close to the best in the world. Second game, they made a hash of chasing a low score against the Pakistan woman. They still won, but it was just a scrape home. Definitely a lot of warning signs for their batting lineup, I think.
And the upcoming match, whoa, they are taking on India now. Looking significant, to put it mildly. So what challenges will South Africa face? What are their chances of progressing further in the tournament at this stage?
It depended on them, I think, sorting their batting out. At the moment, that lineup is very brittle. It's too many all-rounders and not enough specialists. You can't really solve that during a tournament. So some of those batters, like Sunil Lewis, have to come to the party. I think that's going to be the biggest thing. And then India are a lot stronger than Pakistan. So it is quite, it has been called the group of death, and I think that is fair.
Okay, despite that group of death designation, the Proteas women have, to be fair, consistently performed well at major events in recent years. Are we seeing perhaps the emergence of a genuine powerhouse in women's cricket here with our Proteas ladies?
They have been up there for quite a while. I think South Africa doesn't give them enough credit. The only thing is, like the men, I don't think they have the same history of choking necessarily, but they're yet to win a final, which just shows we're not sure yet if they can able to perform when it matters. But I do think it is like the, we are seeing like a rising powerhouse. Yeah.
The 10 billion rand Daggafontein megacity. Right, let's turn to our beloved province, Gauteng, where the long-delayed Daggafontein megacity project now it appears to be back on track. So what exactly is this development? Let's take it from the top. Let's define it there.
So I'll be completely honest. From the beginning, I've thought this was a bit of a joke. I mean, from the name itself, Daggafontein, you obviously can't help but think of, you know, the Dagga itself, which obviously is a slang word for marijuana. But it's supposed to be a big project that brings housing and economic growth to the city of Ekurhuleni, because that's what I think the members of the government were saying when this was announced back in 2017.
That was 9 years ago, yes.
Yeah, it's a long time already.
Right.
That Ekurhuleni had one of the biggest backlogs of informal housing and so on. But we don't actually know much about it. We've heard a lot about, I think even Ramaphosa, the president at some point, was saying, we're going to build this megacity.
Yeah.
But we don't actually know. We have like little tidbits. Lots of money has been thrown at it. The big question is, do we need another megacity, or should we just focus on the cities we already have and trying to get those in order?
You know what, whilst we look at these multiple delays, I mean, I also wanted to, you know, run it by you. Why has it then taken so long to reach the stage? But perhaps let's combine that with another question I have, where government says now the infrastructure is now 90. That's 90% complete. So what then can residents then realistically expect once construction gets fully underway and upon completion?
We don't really know. We haven't been told why. It's been very opaque in terms of why there's been so many delays. For the first thing, we've only now got this information because a member of parliament from the ANC posed a question to the Minister of Human Settlements. In terms of what we can expect from it, I don't know. I'm sure at some point they're going to either use it as, like, not RDP housing, but government housing or something like that, or maybe they'll put it out that they're selling houses and things in the area and try and get businesses and investment.
Well, we wait in sheer anticipation to see exactly how this project will transpire in the coming weeks, months, and years for that matter. And for that matter, exactly how affordable will it be for residents in this day and age? And as we wrap up, Eliezer, what are the key stories you'll be watching over the next week that could have a major impact on our country? And what should we be looking out for?
Obviously, we mentioned Bafana Bafana, that's tonight. I'll address that now quickly. I think we have a good chance at beating the Czechs tonight. I think that the first game was definitely a bit of a wake-up call, but there was a bit of an overreaction. We lost 2-0, but we couldn't really expect much when you're up against 15th in the world in front of their own fans. And another story that I saw, not necessarily like this week, but there's been quite a lot of talk about the walkability of cities, and particularly Johannesburg itself, where we were ranked rock bottom. So there was quite a lot about how people are asked, actually trying to look for neighborhoods to stay in that actually able to walk around. Because traditionally, for so long, we've been reliant on cars and taxis and things like that. It'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Your prediction for the match tonight? Score? I'm putting you on the spot now. I'm doing that deliberately.
It's a good question. I'm going to say 2-1 either way, I think. It could be Bafana. I think we can do it. I think it will be much closer. So I'm going to 2-1.
Well, from political changes within the Government of National Unity to South Africa's hopes on the international cricket stage, major infrastructural developments closer to home, and of course, what are your predictions for the Bafana Bafana match against Czechia at 6 o'clock this evening? Well, it's clear that the country continues to evolve in significant ways. That was our weekly news roundup with Eliezer Enfield, politics, philosophy, and economic student, also a Chai FM news intern and keen observer of South African current affairs. Great having you in studio once again, Eliezer. And join us again next week as we break down the stories that matter most.